Welcome to The Art of Construction, the podcast dedicated to helping you grow your business. Together, we'll explore the world of construction with some of the best minds of the industry. Your host, Evan Tilley, a micro-influencer and sometimes disruptor, will take you on a journey that will lead your business to the next level.
What's up, Art of Construction Tribe? I'm so excited for this journey we're going to start today. I'm live in studio with Robbie Schwarz, who is a leader in building science, and he runs a great platform called Build Tank Inc. In fact, even has his own podcast that we're going to talk about here. But first, I want to lay out how this journey is going to go. Of this first podcast, we're going to get to know Robbie's story and what led us together through BS and Beer, where we're going to be doing a couple podcasts at his great platform that he runs at Tradecraft. And we're going to be interviewing Bryce Ballou, who go all the way back to show 67, released March 2nd of 2017, titled Bringing Community to the Construction Industry. I think that title is kind of the same title as we're here today, right, Robbie? Where we're going to be talking about how do we bring different influencers and people together to build better buildings, which is the art of construction all about. So today we're live in studio with Robbie. Then we're going to go out to Tradecraft, and the next tying together is we're going to talking with Bryce Ballou, where he's very involved with Energize Denver. And then Robbie and I, we're going to flip the roles, and maybe Robbie will ask me a few questions live at BS and Beer, and we're going to learn all about that platform. And then after all that, we're going to bring one of the master facilitators in and kind of circle all that stuff back together. So the main message that I want to convey to you, Tribe, is that building science is not that complicated, or is it? As Robbie and I were discussing before we turned the mic on today, is that you can make it very complicated, and we're going to talk through the different ways of maybe we've made certain things too complicated or different ways to make it simplified, and that's what we're all about. And Robbie has been living this in the building science and has many certifications to talk about. And what I kind of line those out is to talk through those. So my perspective is to learn from somebody who's been doing it for a while and who has these different certifications, but really out on projects and understanding. Robbie, it's an honor to have you here. Let's start off with the speed round. What do you say?
Sounds great.
What's your favorite beverage?
Oh, I like hot tea in the mornings. I am unfortunately a Diet Coke addict.
All right.
Obviously, I like beer.
We just had some nice hot tea at a great lunch, and I'm all inspired for this conversation. Next question, what is a favorite place you've traveled?
Yeah, my wife, she became my wife, and I were able to travel throughout Southeast Asia, and one of the most beautiful places that I went to is a place called Ladakh in northwest India, up in the Himalayas.
Give us one story from that.
Well, we got there, and unfortunately, we joined a trekking group right after we landed in Ladakh. And we had a beautiful trek, but the people we didn't click with great. But just the scenery and beauty of the area, the Tibetan influence, Buddha influence there is just amazing. It's a beautiful place to be, especially if you like mountains.
And what is your favorite hobby or interest outside of the construction arena that we passionately call the art of construction?
Yeah, my family is our big river rafting family. So we've been doing that since the kids were little. Great way to camp with kids. And my son's graduated to be a raft guide now, so it's been a big part of our lives and the outdoor activities living in Colorado.
Yeah, we have some great friends that we go every year, and we get put in at Fruta to Loma, and it's just a great family. We've been doing it since my daughter was 4 years old, and it's just such a fun adventure to get out and do all that stuff, and then you can start climbing up to more adventurous stuff, right?
Yeah, we have climbed up to that more adventurous. We've been able to get on the Grand Canyon three times. So
nice.
It's been a beautiful experience.
Well, it's an honor to have you here, Robbie. It's we've been crossing a lot of different times over the years, but really I'm very excited to hear your story. And that's going back to kind of how we got here today. What is your story that led you to being the principal thinker at the Build Tank?
Yeah, I guess I'll say that if anybody's really interested, they could go to my first episode of the Build Tank Buildcast.
There you go.
Because I interviewed myself.
Oh, nice.
And tried to go through that. But in general, after college, I was actually a history and political science major, so not in the traditional sciences, but I did have this environmental ethic. I started teaching for a while, but then came back to the States and didn't know exactly what I wanted to do other than be in the environmental arena.
Where were you teaching?
I was teaching in Japan for 2 years.
Wow.
My wife and I were over there for 2 years, and then hence the travel and in Asia and whatnot. Coming back to the States, I knew I wanted to do something in the environmental arena. At that time, from a kind of an education perspective, it was environmental policy or environmental law. And I didn't really, neither of those really clicked for me. So I had done construction through high school and a little bit in college and whatnot. Did a variety of internships, but ended up with one of the regional production builders at that time, McStay Neighborhoods. Now they're more of a smaller production builder, but they made it through the downturn and are still going strong there. And at that point, my job, I ended up getting a job there, and it was, how do you bring this new host of green building materials into the construction, into a production environment?
And what time of
this is the early 90s.
Early 90s,
yeah.
Okay.
So those things are pretty standard things these days, but I-joist, cellulose insulation, there was some drywall that was had mass in it. So, it was incredibly heavy sheets of this drywall. Lots of different things, lots of mechanical systems that we were trying there. We did we did the first research house that they did. They ended up doing three research houses with the Department of Energy, Building America teams, NREL, and, the building science group out there, Building Science Corporation. Really learned, kind of got introduced to building science, got introduced to diagnostic testing of houses and whatnot. And like most people that work for a production builder, you get laid off at some point. And I got laid off. But right when I got laid off, the first energy rating classes in Colorado started. So I became an energy rater. And the whole idea at that point was how do you do an energy efficient mortgage? And the energy ratings was the vehicle to create an energy efficient mortgage or an energy improvement mortgage to be able to demonstrate the value add there, that you could add additional PITI basically to your loan equation, and you could loan money off of saying they're going to save on their monthly payments to the utilities, and then they could take that money and maybe put it down for their mortgage payment. Or if you're doing an existing home, that you could wrap the cost of energy improvement into your loan products. And unfortunately, that never took off, but I became a home inspector and an energy rater trying to blend the two of those things together, and realized pretty quickly I wasn't interested in working with the real estate community or the lending community, that I just really felt, they're good people in general, but the industry is just on this quest to close the deal and get their commission and kind of move on there. So ended up getting my first production building client. I continued to do some work, some testing with McStain, but Genesee Homes at the time became US Homes over time, and then Lennar over time. But they were my first really big client, and kind of moved into the new construction arena, continued to learn building science. We're really lucky that a super, I guess in the world of building science, the most popular building scientist is a guy named Joe Stieberk with Building Science Corporation. And he spends a lot of time in Colorado because he's an avid skier. So I'd kind of stalked him around the state and learned building science at different events that he and talks that he was giving, and just continued to move forward. There created my first company, Built Right, which was an energy rating company working with production builders, doing HERS ratings and code compliance work, and then merged with another gentleman and his wife, and we created Energy Logic. Built that for 14 years, decided to go back out on my own in 2020 and created Build Tank. So that's kind of the story.
Awesome. There. So you jumped in production building, kind of learned how it's made, and then really found I really wanted to figure out how to help make these buildings better, and kind of been on a quest for that, right? So what is the pragmatic building think tank all about then?
So Build Tank, yeah, I call it a pragmatic building think tank. It's really a vehicle for me to do whatever I want to do.
That's a good deal.
But it's also kind of in the parameters of trying to make a difference, trying to take sustainable, efficient, high-performance construction and figure out those projects that will help make it mainstream. There's lots of great things going on, but will they resonate with those builders in out on the plains in Lamar, Colorado, or up in the mountains or in other areas? How can we take the building science and the principles of high performance building and sustainable building, resilient building, and make it mainstream so that everybody understands it, but also is passionate about achieving buildings that actually perform and work?
I love it. And I love how you've, as a lifelong learner, you can set up this company to say, I set up a company to do what I want to do, but you do have to figure out what services you offer. So can you talk through kind of what are your pre and during kind of focuses? And then we're going to kind of unpack that onion a little bit from there.
Yeah. I don't do as much of the energy rating and code compliance and field inspection work as I used to, but it's still part of what Build Tank offers. So I can work with a builder to help them navigate the codes, navigate any of the energy efficiency programs or building performance programs out there to certify houses, to help with not only the performance of the house, but potentially the sale of the house and marketing of their business and their house there. I do that to some extent. It's with custom builders rather than production builders, which was the bulk of my career has really been working with the large national production builders that build in the state of Colorado and the regional production builders that work here. And we may get into it at some point, but I think there's a pretty big difference between the way that both those groups work and whatnot. So that involves energy modeling and design review and whatnot. And the biggest thing that I'm trying to do that's kind of has never taken off when working with the larger production builders is getting invited into the process early in the design phase, helping with assembly design and the idea of the four different control layers from a building science perspective are water control, bulk water control, air control, vapor control, and thermal control layers, and trying to figure out assemblies that, again, perform and whatnot. And so trying to wrap that all together and working with builders directly is part of what we do. I also have that's the field side, and then I have the think tank side, which is, again, trying to figure out ways to move our industry forward in a productive and meaningful way to take kind of the sustainable construction into mainstream construction. And what I think is doing that in the best way now that I feel like I'm making a difference is in the energy code worlds and trying to link code development, link code education and the building science that's wrapped into the codes into understanding so that builders can actually use it and trade partners can actually use the code and that it can actually be enforced and not amended. When we build to, let's say, the 2018, anything from the 2012 through the 2021 IECC, you're going to build a well-performing house if you build it to the code. And the problem is that the codes are amended and changed from the way that they're written, and then they're not implemented and enforced there. So if we can change that dynamic, we're going to get houses that work and work well. Yeah, and so I do other kind of think tank projects. We've done some work with some area separation wall burn testing. I helped do the residential energy field study for the Department of Energy in Colorado, New Mexico, and Nevada. So kind of getting, again, I get to pick and choose because I'm a company of one to do the things that I think will help make a difference.
One of the things that I raised my hand, and I'd love for you to kind of give it a 30-second commercial, but then kind of take a deep dive into what is ResNet and talk through as what it means to be a certified HERS rater and what that's all about. And start from the very beginning. And if I'm the one that's really needs it, I own a window and door company and I hear HERS ratings and all these different ResNet, but I don't think I really have taken the time to really grasp what that all is. So can you talk through that for us?
First of all, ResNet stands for the Residential Energy Services Network. And ResNet's an organization, a nonprofit organization that is the governing body of the home energy rating world. And HERS stands for Home Energy Rating System. So when you're a HERS rater, the best way I think to describe a HERS rater is that it provides a systematic approach for how to evaluate a house. In essence, what we're doing is we're evaluating the assets, the energy assets of the house, and figuring out what they are and how we're going to model them to represent the energy assets of the house on a energy rating index rating scoring system. So the scoring system, you could think of it kind of like a miles per gallon rating for a house. And in that context, it's a scale that it's a descending scale. So like a golf score, the lower the score, the more energy efficient the house is. It's benchmarked at 100 on the scale, and a house that achieves 100 on the scale is equivalent to a house that was built to the 2006 International Energy Conservation Code. Every point in relationship to that 100 is 1% of energy use. So if you score 50, you're 50% better than the 2006 IECC. Zero on the scale is that net zero energy home, a home that uses as much energy as it produces there. And then the Department of Energy has benchmarked around 130 on the scale would be the average existing home out there. So the worst house that I've ever been involved with was somewhere in the 250 range. And the best house was like negative 20, 27, somewhere in that range, meaning that they had a PV system on there that's producing way more energy than it needed and was probably feeding back into the grid there. So the home energy rating world, or being a rater, again, is this idea of a systematic approach to how to analyze a house. So you learn the building science, but you also learn how to do a takeoff of a house and how to build an energy model, how to assess how well insulation was installed or air barrier systems. You do the diagnostic testings like the blower door testing and air leakage testing for duct systems and ventilation measurements and all kinds of testing on houses. And when you're doing that, you're doing it from, again, the perspective of measuring the assets of the house, these energy assets. But if you're doing an energy rating index, you really do not care at all about how well something was installed. You're just assessing how it was installed, and you're modeling the performance of how it was installed there. So when energy rating world began really with existing homes that worked, and then as we learned that it really took off in the new construction arena, it's kind of morphed a little bit, and we have to understand what we're doing a rating for and what we're doing a rating on. Now the energy rating index system is part of a potential compliance pathway for the energy code. When you're doing an energy rating on a house for code compliance, you do care about how it was installed and if it was installed according to the requirements of the code. Whereas if I was doing it for an energy rating index for the HERS system, I'm just looking at how it's installed and modeling that performance. So I have to have a clear idea of what I'm rating and how I'm going to approach that house. If it's from an HERS energy rating index, or if I'm rating for code compliance or Energy Star or passive house compliance, what I'm actually rating it for there to be able to get the right results. But again, ultimately, it goes back to this approach to be able to look at the house. And then we've kind of adapted it into, well, maybe I'm adding additional quality assurance because I'm now looking at it from a code perspective of, is it been installed right? Is it going to perform? Those types of things.
Yeah, and I think the benchmark of, like, if you want to look at simplified, is you have to meet the code to as a baseline. And then you had mentioned passive house, and I want to unpack that a little bit, where you can go look back at podcasts with our friends at EMU talking about fee, or when I was confused, I fee and FEUS. So then I had Katrine episode 270 talking about FEUS of the Passive House Institute US versus Passive House International of the German. And a guy like you that's here in Colorado, can you unpack a little bit? Correct me if I'm wrong. You are a FEUS plus rater, but you have to make sure what cap you're wearing, of what lens you're coming in and being asked how to look at that, right?
Exactly. Yeah, you have to know if the house, what the house's objectives are. And that's, you know, always the first thing that we need to talk about is, is your objectives to meet code? Is your objectives to go to Energy Star, FEUS, or what are the objectives of the house? When you're talking about analyzing it and doing, you know, energy modeling or energy consulting with it. So FEUS was developed, it's basically an outgrowth of the Passive House Institute that was created in Germany and was brought to the United States. Now, the problem with that is that it's based off of a Northern European climate zone, and they didn't make any, there's no kind of nuances to implementing the PHI version of Passive House in the United States when you're building that house in Southern Florida or, Arizona or something like that, in a very different climate zone. And that's what Katrine Klingenberg, the kind of the person that brought FEUS to or Passive House to the United States, kind of realized there. So she started partnering with the Department of Energy and Building Science Corporation, again, the kind of famous building science group in the United States. And they started to adapt the Passive House program and standards to incorporate climate-specific specific areas and specific needs in those climate zones. The other thing that they did is that they added utilization of a rater to go in and kind of verify how the assemblies are actually being put together versus the PHI project. They don't necessarily tell you how to institute or execute their standard. They tell you this is how you do the energy model, and you have to achieve this level of performance, and these are the R values and U values that you need to put into it. And then they'll teach you some of the building science about why you need to worry about air leakage in a wall assembly that's, you know, 12 inches thick and the condensation issues that could be created from that. But they don't necessarily go into the exact installation of the details to make it successful.
And that's what EMU does do. They have a whole class system.
Yeah.
Where they're different companies have come that are stewards of a principle, but then you have to make that principle work, right? Yes. And so
EMU has added that on top of the classic European PHI, Passive House Institute. Whereas FEUS has kind of taken a different direction, and they've adopted and changed the traditional Passive House to make it more climate specific. Then they've adopted the DOE, the Department of Energy Zero Energy Ready Home Program, on top of that, which brings in quality assurance, verification in the field. It brings in indoor air quality issues in a more robust way than just thinking about ventilation and filtration. You're thinking about the products that are brought in and that might off-gas and whatnot. And you're ensuring that the house is set up to potentially go to a complete zero or electrified situation there. So I don't know if I was to have to choose between PHI and FIAS. I think personally I would choose FIAS because I think the climate-specific requirements make a lot of sense in the United States. But you know, the ultimate end result is really pretty much the same there. I would say. I think there are some folks that really feel that PHI is substantially outperforming FIAS, but I just think that they're pretty much the same.
Gotcha. Any other certifications worth mentioning that we've haven't discussed?
Yeah, I think we kind of tertiarily talked about Energy Star and the Department of Energy programs, but those are important to know because those are foundation programs that have been around for a while that are attainable for any builder. And through my work with the Marshall Fire rebuild and as the new homes building advisor there are tons of rebates and other incentives to build to these programs. And one of the things that I've really noticed is that custom builders are not familiar with, have not been working with in the guidance of a building program. And they are really struggling with understanding the requirements, understanding the relationship that they should have with an energy rater that will help guide them and certify that building, let alone the value that they can get out of really branding themselves as an Energy Star builder or a DOE Zero Energy Ready home builder or even a passive house builder. There are huge marketing benefits for builders out there that they just are not taking advantage of. And the biggest place we've saw that is the old Stapleton community that's now called Central Park. It was and is an Energy Star community. Since its inception in the mid-90s, it's almost built out now. But there's only one builder that's built in that community that's really branded themselves as a Energy Star high performance builder when there are 20 or 30 builders that have built in that community over the course of 20 or so years.
Yeah, I didn't know that you
have no idea that they were building Energy Star houses.
Yeah, so what if I'm hearing you right, you're saying, getting the right energy rating partner can help you so much in savings and marketing and putting that stuff all together to where you could actually get more benefits than just building to code or the lowest the way to do it.
Yeah. Well, even if you built to code using that third party to help you with compliance with code can help you, to figure out, I should be marketing what I'm doing with code too, because if you're not telling people what you're doing, you're just giving it away there, right? And also third-party verification leads to additional quality control, which leads to less warranty issues, leads to better performance, better satisfaction, just better brand development. And the big thing is that builders don't have a brand. I can think of one builder that I think has a brand, and locally that would be Thrive Home Builders. But Lennar, that's not a brand. Once I buy a Lennar house and that community closes, nobody knows it's a Lennar house that you're living in. There's no brand there and unless they actually cultivate it.
One of the things that, we're passionate about, we've been talking a lot about, that we've coined as system built, and you and I, as we were having our pre-conversations of getting into this journey we're going to go on together of bringing different Art of Construction Master Facilitators into the build tank, is what is the best way to move this thing forward outside of doing the right things and marketing and making things aware? But what we were talking a lot about is a custom house a better construction house or a production home? And can you talk through my thought process around system build about scaling and producing a kit of parts that's repeatable? And what's your take on production versus custom construction?
Yeah, so I'm going to take the system built a little bit on a sidetrack, because the idea of building a house as a system is kind of a fundamental principle of building science, that it's all about the synergism of how things come together to achieve things that we couldn't achieve by themselves. You know, a simple example of that is that we need an air barrier and a thermal barrier in conjunction with each other and in continuity around the house to get a system that actually works, because all the fibrous insulations that we put out into our homes, the objective of that fibrous insulation, it doesn't matter if it's cellulose or fiberglass. The objective of the material is to trap a pocket of air. It's that stagnant pocket of air that gives us the resistance to the flow of energy. So if I don't have that insulation inside of an air barrier system, I can't get the right result. So that's this idea of the systematic approach to building a house to create performance there, that you put two things together and you get this third result that, you know, maybe was unexpected, but maybe not. Maybe it's what we should be expecting there. And I think you're taking it to the kind of the next level, where you're talking about systemizing assemblies so that you can bring a whole assembly to the house, I mean, to the site.
Yeah,
to,
taking
to
different kitted parts and branding them as a system.
Whether that's modules or panels or those types of things. And I agree that, you know, we have so much more control and predictability of the end result if we can build it in a more contained and controlled environment, like a warehouse or something, and then take it to the site. It just seems like it's really difficult to execute still. And, you know, there's some people that have been successful at it, but to really scale it, I don't see anybody out there yet that's...
Yeah. What do you think? Do you think a production house is made better or a custom house?
From that perspective, right now, kind of coming from more of the production realm, and beginning since 2020, working more and more with custom builders, there are a whole set of custom builders that are doing, you know, fabulous work. And I become a fan of Instagram, and I call these guys the Instagram builders that are really out there. Again, like what you're doing, trying to share information and help everybody improve and whatnot. But I would say on the whole, I think the production builders are doing a better job than the custom builders, because they largely have this repeatability of their product, and they've created a more systematic approach. The other thing we talked about is that they're not beholden to the customer, so that they can really have ownership of the assembly from the exterior drainage plane to the interior drywall, and they're not going to change their process of how they're, and you know, the process of how they're going to build it isn't going to change because somebody thinks that the budget needs to get adjusted and whatnot. And instead of sacrificing the granite countertop, a custom builder is going to sacrifice the building assembly. In a lot of cases anyway.
And the part that I think that is a guy that's done 300 plus podcasts, it really made me think of, like, if you're on the outside looking in, if you hear the word custom, you may go right to thinking, well, that if it's custom, it's so much better built than mass produced production homes. And that may be the case, but actually it's more the custom is they're thinking about the bells and whistles instead of the building envelope, and about how to making sure that there isn't, you know, callbacks and those type of things. So I think you'd have to really have to learn from both of those to put them all together.
And, you know, it's probably an unfair question, but if you had to choose, I think I would lean towards the production guys, because like you said, the custom folks are focused on the aesthetics. They're beholden to their client, and it's very hard for them to to just be rigid and toe the line that says from the drainage plane to the interior drywall is me. And I'm not, this is how I do it. And sorry if you don't, you know, if you don't like that, you can go to somebody else, but we're not going to value engineer that assembly there. We can value engineer, we can definitely take value engineering into account here to, you know, to assess the budget and whatnot, but that's going to come on all the aesthetic side of the equation, not on the assembly side of the equation.
Yeah, and that comment you're saying, I think your upper echelon builders, if they've been around and they haven't got, they'll put their foot down in most cases to say, you got to build something that's going to last and be well built.
And that's why I think these, you know, again, I term them the Instagram builders. A lot of them are custom builders, and they've figured out that balance between, you know, the relationship with their client, the aesthetic side, but towing the line on, you know, the assembly, so that they're getting assemblies that are repeatable, that are working, and they're learning the details.
At the beginning, you mentioned if you want to know your story, you can go to episode number one of the Buildcast. But so can you talk a little bit more about your podcast? Who do you interview? Kind of what the premise is? So Art of Construction, go check that out, and we'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, I appreciate that. The Buildcast, again, is kind of just a passion project. I think it's a great way to talk to a variety of different people and really try to delve into their story and how they got to where they are, and then talk about, you know, a specific issue that we might be interested in. It's all obviously related to the construction industry, but I've talked to everybody from homeowners to the associate director of the FIAS program there. And, you know, so there's, you know, I guess the only theme is that it's somehow related to the construction industry. And then I also like to kind of delve a little bit deeper into their past, kind of like what we did today, and then get into a topic. But the topics can be widespread, from research to actually building details to, you know, how are windows put together, you know, all the kind of different things there.
Awesome. And all these are going to be coming out after all these upcoming interviews, but we'll make sure we put links to the show notes as far as what BS and Beer is all about from a national footprint. But I'm super excited for the journey you and I are going to go on together as far as at your event. I've been coming to your BS and Beer, and great conversation of really getting around the table and saying how locally we can put that together, but tied into a whole kind of national footprint. Can you kind of tee up these upcoming podcasts and talk a little bit about what BS and Beer is and how it was formalized? And we'll have a deep dive in that in the upcoming podcasts.
Yeah. So BS and Beer, I really was introduced to during the pandemic. And during the pandemic, when we're all kind of stuck at home, I found a whole host of great building and building science-based trainings and conversations that were happening online. BS and Beer really started in Maine, and a group of people who are interested in building science and drinking beer and kind of getting together and having a discussion group about different topics of building science and construction, they were getting together. And as the pandemic happened, they had the ear, and maybe somebody from Taunton Press, who publishes Fine Home Building Magazine, was part of that group and offered a Zoom platform for them to take it kind of national during the pandemic. And since the pandemic, a number of affiliate groups, I guess you could call them, have popped up in different parts of the country. And the kind of the only thing that they request is that nobody trademark the name BS and Beer, and they'll give you ideas of topics that you can talk about and whatnot. Most BS and Beer groups happen at a brewery or something like that. We happen to land on Tradecraft, and we'll talk to Bryce more about what Tradecraft is and what he's doing at Tradecraft, as well as his work with Energize Denver. But we'll talk about why we ended up there when we have that conversation. But in general, BSM Beer Denver Metro is a building science discussion group, and we get together the third Tuesday of every month to have a networking section and drink some beer, have some pizza right now, and then we dive into a topic, usually with somebody who's come in to present for a little bit, and then we can have a discussion afterwards.
Love it. Yeah, and we're honored to be part of that. As we work on closing this one out, that this podcast is dedicated to the builders and the affiliates to connect the right construction technology and products to the right handshakes. Robbie, what is your crystal ball for the future with technology and construction?
Yeah, that's a hard one there. I'm hopeful that more systematic building and more modular construction can take off. It seems like it's a big lift. It seems like right now we're dealing with the labor issues of construction by trying to go retroactive and build trade school type programs in high schools and whatnot. And that seems to me like a 30-year solution to a problem that needs to be solved immediately. So I think I'm going to go a little bit different route and say that I'm hopeful that we're going to figure out the immigration issues that we have in this country, because there's a labor force there that wants to work in construction, that unfortunately the average American doesn't want to do there. And if we can integrate that workforce in a way that works with our other societal issues there, I think we can build the housing that we need. And if we continue in this effort of really good education that's out there for the trades and for the quote unquote builders out there, and code officials needed as well, I think we should be able to set the ground to be able to move forward.
Love it. And what is the final question we always ask? What is that one thing you want to leave our builders and affiliates to think about as they go out there to crush it and grow their business?
I don't know about growing the business and whatnot. Well, I guess the big thing is to, from a business perspective, especially from a building perspective, is you've got to talk about what you're doing. Builders are so reluctant to say that they're an Energy Star builder, or that they're, you know, the good things that they're doing to create the products that they're building there. And if you don't talk about it, a mentor of mine always said, if you're not talking about it, you're giving it away. So I think we need to stop giving it away. On the other side, I really think that we need to kind of where we started was, you know, is building science complicated or not? And we need to understand the building science to be able to move forward. And that's going to help us in our industry to kind of change the idea that the construction industry is doing a poor job out there, that trade partners and contractors are shysters and whatnot. We need to change that perspective, but we need to build products that actually work there. So understanding the basics of the building science makes a lot of sense. And why I said it's not that complicated, because I think you can boil it down to this. Building science is all about control and predictability. And you have to have control and predictability of airflow, moisture flow, and thermal flow. And how you execute that is going to give you that control of airflow, moisture flow, and thermal flow. So if somebody asks you, can a house be too tight? You know, the answer is no. A house can't be too tight because you have to gain control and predictability of that airflow there. And then we can talk, you know, in more depth building science why, but it just concentrate on that control and predictability. Everything is about control and predictability. If I can control the water flow, I can control the airflow, I can control the way that the energy is flowing through the thermal envelope, and I can make it predictable, I'm going to have a house that performs and performs well.
Awesome. Robbie, what an honor. I'm excited to be on this journey with you. We'll see you at Tradecraft on the next one, huh?
Great. I appreciate it, and I look forward to it.
All right. Crush it out there, Tribe.